to today's edition of Worcester Talking News. Brought to you by Worcester News and Equipment for the Blind, with permission of the Worcester News, and recorded on Thursday, the 25th of April, here at Colin Chan's house. I'm Evelyn Brock, editor for this edition, and with me to read for you is Moira Lowe. Our recording engineer is Alex Gwynn, and we are, as usual, ably supported by the admin team, led by Carol Hartle. A warm welcome to all our listeners, especially new ones. I do hope you enjoy this week's offering. In addition to news items, you'll hear some useful telephone numbers, readers' letters, and thought for the week. Nowadays, the telephone numbers and the obituaries are placed following the closing music, so if you wish to hear them, please stay tuned then. Don't forget that recordings are usually available as podcasts, but at present talking books aren't available on memory sticks, but rather on CDs and tapes. Also, do let us know your birthdays, so that we can greet you specially when that time comes. This service is free to users, but if you would like to make a voluntary donation, it can be sent to Colin Chance House, Wilds Lane, Worcester, WR5 1DA. We do like hearing from you, and a message can be left on our answer phone. That's Worcester 01905 767766, or you could add a note to your wallet. If there's a problem with any aspect of your receiving recordings, please use the answer phone facility on the number I've just given and leave a message to that effect. So we'll start off now with thought for the week, which Moira will read for us.
Okay, this is from Psalm 90, verses 10. Our days may come to 70 years, or 80, if our strength endures. Yet the best of them are but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom.
Thank you, Moira. Now for the headline articles. And Moira will start those off for us.
Okay, so my headline is from Friday, April the 19th. Hero drags couple from burning car. A hero pulled an elderly couple from a burning car before it was totally engulfed by the inferno during a dramatic rescue near Worcester yesterday morning. Clive Jarvis pulled the elderly couple from their burning vehicle in Malvern Road, Powick, near Worcester, moments before the vehicle was consumed by the inferno. Mr. Jarvis arrived in the nick of time after he stopped when he noticed smoke coming from the car bonnet. His partner, Shelley Arison, described her 38-year-old partner as a hero and said she was very proud of him, but modest Mr. Jarvis said it was no big deal and his actions were just everyday. He always stops to help people. I'm so proud of him to put himself in danger for somebody else. That takes some guts, she said. Dramatic photos show flames leaping from the bonnet and thick black smoke billowing out of the bonnet. Mr. Jarvis lifted the couple out of the car by their waists and made sure they were at a safe distance before the fire crew arrived. Mr. Jarvis, who works for Elite Recovery in Droitwich, said he was pulling out of Hospital Lane, turning into Malvern Road, when he saw a car smoking near the Four Seasons Chinese restaurant. I just dragged them out. I just said, if I were you, I would get out as fast as you can. I picked them up and took them up the road. It happened so quickly. There were some people at the bus stop watching. A paramedic who works in Birmingham also stopped. I don't think the couple knew what was going on. They looked more shocked at what had happened. They were an elderly couple on their way to hospital. He tried to stop traffic and get other drivers to turn around. I was just trying to stop people driving past in case it went bang. I was trying to keep everyone at a safe distance. Firefighters turned up really quickly. They did a good job, he said. Hereford and Worcester Fire and Rescue Service crew from Worcester Fire Station was called to Malvern Road in Powick at 10:13 a.m. He said, a car was well alight and the fire was fought by one firefighter wearing breathing apparatus. Two occupants were checked over and advised to attend A&E. The vehicle was checked for hotspots using a thermal imaging camera and highways were informed due to potential damage to the road. The incident was marked as pending closure at 11:35 a.m.
Now the headline from Saturday and Sunday's issue of the Worcester News, which is End of an Era as Pub is Demolished, Old Harvest a Site to Become New Care Home. It is the end of an era for a former city pub as work has begun to demolish the building. Cranes were on the scene at the Harvester on Droitwich Road as developers prepare to build a new care home. The building, more formally known as Purdiswell House, allegedly has some parts which date back to the 1840s. Yesterday, a blue digger was at the property, removing parts of the house and lifting rubble into three big red construction bins. A construction worker on site said it could take up to 2 weeks to demolish the entire building. Worcester City Council's planning committee gave the green light to demolish the former Purdiswell Harvester and replace it with a 76-bed care home, a year after throwing out a similar plan for being too big. The plans, which were submitted by MACC Care, were narrowly backed by councillors. The pub in Clanes closed its doors in April 2019 after owners Mitchells and Butlers decided to sell up, just 3 years after investing in a major refurbishment. Since then, it has sat empty and derelict until now. Before the plans for the current care home were granted, a similar plan for a 78-bed care home on the same site was rejected by councillors in 2022, who called the designs ugly and depressing, and lacking imagination, and akin to barracks for warehousing people. Councillors had gone against the advice of officers when it rejected the plan, and planners who described the latest plan as broadly identical to the one rejected last year, again recommended the care home be approved. A controversial plan to build a McDonald's drive-through on the site was eventually withdrawn in November 2019 after hundreds objected, saying it should not be built near a school. Previously, a spokesperson for MACC Care said that the building is not listed, is unsuitable for conversion, and has been assigned and assessed as a non-designated heritage asset.
Okay, my headline is Garages Pulled Down Illegally. Planning laws are not being enforced after two blocks of garages in a Worcester street were knocked down without permission via election candidates. The garages in Tierne Street were demolished at the end of March, but approval should have been sought from the City Council beforehand. Bertie Ballinger, who is standing as Conservative candidate for the St Clement ward in the upcoming election, lives in the area. On March the 16th, I noticed that the roof on some of the garages had been taken off, he said. Whilst this isn't odd, I made note of it. Later on, more of the garages were being knocked down, until on March the 28th, when the majority of the garages had come down. From previously working on planning permission, I believed that to knock these down, the landowner needed planning permission. I emailed the planning enforcement team about this for them to investigate. 2 weeks later, enforcement attended the site and came to the conclusion that planning permission was required and hadn't been submitted, but because it was likely that it would have been granted, no action will be taken against the landowner. Mr. Ballinger said that he, fellow election candidate Seb James and other residents find the situation troubling. He said it sets a dangerous precedent that Worcester City Planning won't enforce the law and local planning rules in the future. The landowner has assured the planning department that they will apply for planning permission soon to convert the site into a car park and build new accommodation. But given the landowner's lack of respect for the planning department and the lack of enforcement from the department, anything could happen now. Seb and I will continue to work with local residents regarding this ongoing situation. A spokesman for the City Council said, "We have told the landowner that he should have sought approval before demolishing these garages and stressed that he took this action at his own risk. We have asked for details of how the site will be made safe and tidied up, and we will take enforcement action if necessary. Any future development at this site will need planning permission."
Now the headline article from Tuesday, April the 23rd. Car arson attack. Family's horror as dream Peugeot goes up in flames. A shocked family awoke to find smoke pouring from their car after it was set on fire, quotes, deliberately. The stench of smoke woke Emma Collins and her family in the early hours of the morning on Saturday, April the 20th, when they discovered her car engulfed in flames. Ms. Collins of Trent Road in Ronkswood, Worcester, said it had been a normal evening as she prepared to take her seven-year-old daughter to a swimming lesson the next morning when her partner smelt a fire outside their property. "We were all asleep. My partner said he could smell fire. We looked out of the window and saw the back of the car was on fire. We shoved everyone in the back room as the car was fully in flames and the only escape was through the front door. The only other way to escape would have been to jump from the second bedroom window. That's when the fire brigade arrived." She described her red Peugeot 208 as her dream car that she'd bought as it was safe, up to date with the latest technology. While no one was hurt, the car was left with significant fire damage to the rear, with windows smashed and the bonnet also crumpled. "It's a quiet, safe neighbourhood with families and full-time workers," she added. "Nothing happens that's out of the ordinary, so I'm lost for words. I don't know who's done it. I'm thinking they are going to come back. It's really scary." Ms. Collins said panic set in when black smoke filled the air and she feared that the car would explode. "It's still raw. I haven't really slept," she said. "It's come out of the blue. I like living here. It's peaceful and a nice area. Everyone gets along. It was lucky it didn't set the house alight as well." Investigations into the cause of the fire have been launched by police, while Ms. Collins said CCTV footage from a neighbour captured a person who may have been responsible for the incident. A spokesperson for West Mercia Police said, "Shortly after 3 a.m. on Saturday morning, we were called by the fire service to a car fire on Trent Road in Worcester. The incident is being treated as arson and an investigation has been launched."
Okay, so this is yesterday's headline, "Chainsaw used in Dawn drugs bust." Masked police armed with a chainsaw and battering rams smashed their way through two doors in the same house during a dramatic Dawn raid. The rumble of a chainsaw and the sound of a splintering door broke the silence in Canterbury Road in Ronkswood, Worcester, yesterday morning. Officers hacked and bashed their way through one heavy-duty door and, at the same time, at the same property, They also hammered their way through a second in search of drugs after securing a search warrant from the courts. Acting on intelligence from the community, the warrant was carried out as part of Operation Forefront, a series of targeted strikes to tackle crime across Worcestershire. Officers from West Mercia Police's task force, wearing helmets and equipped with body armour, made the entry using a chainsaw, followed by an enforcer, also known as the Big Red Key, as shouts of "police" and "stay where you are" rang out in the residential street at around 7:50 a.m. Meanwhile, a second door was being knocked through in the same property before officers streamed inside. The joint warrant at the end of Terra's home also involved Safer Neighbourhood team officers. A search was conducted by police and a drug sniffer dog called Loki after a convoy of police vans pulled up outside. Although no drugs were found, two motorbikes believed to be linked to antisocial behaviour were seized and taken away by a recovery truck. The occupiers of the property returned as the search was carried out, with one of the men detained. Chief Inspector Brian Gibbs said of Operation Forefront, ahead of the warrant, "It's about making our community safe. For you in the Safer Neighbourhood team, this is the core of what you do. It is right to act on this intelligence." Police and Crime Commissioner John Campion was on the warrant at an earlier one and said they were important in public confidence terms and showed the joint work between specialist teams and neighbourhood offices. Two motorbikes were seized, which are suspected to have been used in antisocial behaviour on land near Nunnery Wood High School, land also used by dog walkers and families. Sergeant Brian Simpkins, part of the Safer Neighbourhood team, said, "We are making inquiries to see if we can now identify the riders who will be dealt with accordingly. Those bikes will now be taken away. It's two more off-road motorbikes gone. We have a number of scrambler bikes using that land for antisocial behaviour. It can be a danger for walkers and dog walkers. People bring their families up there and they're blighted by machines like this flying around. The bikes will be returned if they are found to have no link to any criminal or antisocial behaviour."
And the last headline article for the week follows on from the one that Moira has just read to us. "Chainsawing cops cut up my flip-flops. Granddad's outrage at dawn raid." And it's illustrated by a very disgruntled-looking gentleman holding damaged footwear. "Granddad with heart problems has spoken of his anger after masked police with a chainsaw hacked their way into his home, scared his seven dogs and cut up his flip-flops. Terry Harrison arrived at his home in Canterbury Road in Ronkswood to find his two front doors smashed down and his dogs running loose after a dawn drugs raid on Tuesday. No drugs were found at his home, but two motorbikes were seized and taken away on a recovery truck, one belonging to his 16-year-old grandson. West Mercia police officers at the scene told him they were investigating whether the bikes were linked to antisocial behaviour. However, Mr. Harrison does not believe police should take the bike at all, as the warrant was for drugs and they didn't find any. The 67-year-old said, "This is the third time I've been raided and the police have never found a single thing. 2 or 3 years ago, they raided for guns. They never found any." Mr. Harrison, who suffers from angina, type 2 diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, gout and depression, says he believes someone with a grudge has been reporting him, even though he has done nothing. He also said unsolicited Chinese takeaways and taxis have been arriving at his house and his windows had been smashed in the past. Mr. Harrison said he has been suffering from chest pains since the incident and intends to see a doctor. The retired lorry driver, who's lived at the property for the last 42 years, said, "I am angry. It's just me living here and my seven dogs. I think it's heavy-handed. They've caused a lot of damage. When they smashed the doors, I was worried about my dogs getting out. I was worried about them getting hurt by the chainsaw. The first thing I said when I got home was, 'Where's my dogs? Are any of them hurt? I'm glad my grandkids weren't in.'" As previously reported, police seized two scrambler motorbikes from one of the sheds, but no drugs were found. Mr. Harrison, a father of three, said one belonged to his son and the other to his 16-year-old grandson, bought for him as a 16th birthday present. "The bikes aren't even on the warrant. All I want is my grandson's bike back, as it was his birthday present," he said. Officers at the scene said they were allowed to seize any items they suspected of being linked to any criminality, even though the warrant was issued for drugs. During the raid, officers damaged two front doors, three shed doors, the back lights of his caravan, and his 100-pound Hoodrich sliders. The chainsaw also cut up 16 PlayStation 4 games, which had been by the door. He says the dogs, five Jack Russell Terriers, a Rottweiler, and a French Bulldog are still stressed. A spokesperson for West Mercia Police said officers carried out a warrant at an address on Canterbury Road in Worcester this morning, Tuesday, following intelligence given to police. No arrests were made. However, two bikes were found at the property, which officers believed to be linked to antisocial behaviour. The bikes were seized and inquiries into this are ongoing. All warrants, such as the one carried out this morning, must be granted by a magistrate at court based on sufficient evidence.
Okay, so I've got the pleasure of the sports article this week. Youth football. A girls' football team is fulfilling their dream after being given the amazing opportunity to play in a stadium. It would be a night to remember on Tuesday as Worcester City girls under 15 and Worcester United girls would be given the opportunity to play at Six Ways. Steve Birmingham, lead coach for Worcester City Girls under 15, said it is the first time this has happened for a local girls team in the Mercian League. "Those girls really deserve this after the work they have done over the years. It is a nice reward for their hard work as they have fundraised a lot of money. It is what they deserve and they are a great bunch of lovely girls. We've organised it so the music will play when they walk out. When I was a boy, I only dreamed of having this experience, and they are fulfilling their dream. Tuesday's game, which kicks off at 7 p.m, will be one of two games the girls will play at the stadium to give every player the chance to play on a professional pitch. The second game will be against Hallas Hawks JFC in Halesowen. The Worcester City girls currently play at Purdaswell Leisure Centre, so it will be a huge change for them to play at Six Ways Stadium."
Thank you, Maura. And now on this day. So all the facts and quotes on this article are from April the 25th in years gone by. First of all, April the 25th last year, Harry Belafonte, singer, actor and tireless activist who supported the US civil rights movement, died aged 96. That makes me feel old. Now, birthdays on April the 25th. Al Pacino, actor, 84. Bjorn Ulvaeus, a member of ABBA, the pop group, 79. Talia Shire, actress, 78. Andy Bell, pop musician in Eurasia, 60. Renee Zellweger, actress, 55, and Jason Lee, actor, 54. The illustration for today's On This Day is a picture of Oliver Cromwell. Oliver Cromwell with his famous wart on his chin and his armour on, obviously, from the battles of the English Civil War. And it celebrates the fact that on April the 25th, 1599, he was born in Huntingdon. He became Lord Protector of England, Britain's first and only dictator. So now the dates in history, the years all April the 25th. 1859, work began on the 100-mile Suez Canal. 1872, C.B. Fry, all-round sportsman, was born in Croydon. He played football, cricket and rugby and was also an athlete, hunter, fisherman and novelist. 1915, Australian, New Zealand, British and French forces landed on the Gallipoli Peninsula. And of course, the end was doubly tragic. 1926, Toscanini, the famous conductor, conducted the first performance of Puccini's last opera, Turandot, in Milan. 1945, 50 nations gathered in San Francisco to begin the United Nations Conference on International Organizations. 1969, the radio serial Mrs. Dale's Diary ended after 21 years and 5,400 episodes. I remember it well. Her last words were, "I'm rather worried about Jim." 1975, Portugal held its first free elections for 50 years. 1983, in Germany, the newspaper Stern published extracts from the so-called Hitler Diaries, also published by the Sunday Times in Britain. And of course, they were later found to be forgeries. Several eminent historians had egg on their faces, I seem to remember. 2005, Bulgaria and Romania sign accession treaties to join the European Union. And 2007, the world of football paid tribute after Alan Ball, the youngest member of England's 1966 World Cup winning side, died of a heart attack at the age of 61. So now, this week, we have some letters for you. We don't always have letters from the Worcester News, but we seem to have two pages of them this week. So I'll ask Moira to start with hers.
Okay, then. So my first letter is from Mary Long Donohoe. "I feel saddened that there seems to be a general acceptance that the iconic Worcestershire County Cricket Ground will be abandoned due to it repeatedly flooding. When people think of Worcester, they think of the cathedral, Liam Perrin's source, and of course the cricket ground. I travel all around the country giving presentations about flooding. And when I talk about Worcester, the audience always mentions the cricket ground. It has been given the accolade of the most beautiful ground in the country, which of course it is. The views from there on a summer's day are breathtaking. Dickie Bird, the now retired and much revered umpire, loved the county ground and indeed visited it as part of a Songs of Praise special devoted to him as one of his favourite places to be. I sincerely hope that the board will be undertaking a feasibility study to see if building a flood elevation scheme for the ground is a viable option. Of course, it would be expensive and technically challenging due to the complexities of the drainage and groundwater flooding issues. But if Upton and Bewdley can be successfully protected, why not the county cricket ground? The cost benefit of moving and building a new facility and the huge commercial loss to central Worcester when the ground is no longer there should certainly be taken into consideration. If a feasibility study does show that protecting the ground is either unviable or too expensive, then at least the many people who are upset at the thought of the loss of Worcester's home of cricket will be satisfied that the board haven't just thrown in the towel and walked away. So the next letter is from Karen Lewing and Hannah Cooper, Arboretum Ward City Councillors for Worcester Green Party. We are writing in support of national charity Living Streets Call to see 60% of children walking to school by 2029. Fewer than half of primary school age children walk to school in England, a drop from 70% a generation ago. When we design streets for children, we create places that work better for everyone. Increased walking rates will be reduced, road casualties, reduced congestion, improve health and air quality, reduce carbon emissions and boost our economy. A combination of ambitious yet realistic targets, at least 10% of transport budgets spent on active travel, improved road safety in our neighbourhoods and empowering local authorities to make the right transport decisions would go a long way to creating safer streets for children to walk and play. Walking to school is at the heart of the Green Party's transport policy, and locally we have supported the setting up of bike buses across the city. This policy will also contribute to addressing the current climate, economic and health crises. Okay, my next one is from Heather Pook of Dorset. I wonder if you can answer my query. I went to the Alice Otley School from 1947. I understood that there was one of the three original black pear trees in what was the perfect garden adjoining Whitston House, which had originally belonged to an uncle of Edward Elgar, where he frequently stayed. Elgar also visited the school on a number of occasions and was much involved in the music there. There was also an enormous mulberry tree in the school grounds, and many of us kept silkworms. Did these trees disappear when new facilities were built at the school? I also remember there being a row of very tall poplars inside the wall backing onto Tennis Walk. No doubt those have all gone too. I don't think I would recognise Worcester as I remember it. My grandparents had a greengrocer's at 46th Tithing before I was born. Sorry to burden you, but when you reach your 80s, you tend to reminisce with rose-coloured glasses. And my final letter is from Lois Kirby. Regarding the plan for a light railway on the Old Malvern to Upton line, while a compelling case has been made for this project, it fails to take into account the presence of major badger sets along the line when the population of this unique animal has been decimated by more than 10 years of culling. The UK has a declining level of wildlife and development most often takes priority over conservation. In this case, nature must come first.
Well, with the surname Brock, I support being kind to badgers. Well, my letters start off with one from a John Brady of Worcester, and it's illustrated by a photograph of two characters in the WODS production of Me and My Girl. And Mr. Brady says, "Wow. What a show Wads put on at the Swan Theatre. Me and My Girl was simply first rate. From the excellent leading characters through to the exceptional supporting company, this was a stunning show in all parts from beginning to end. Many people look to top London shows for their quality and breathtaking scenery changes. This Worcester show had all these qualities in spades, from acting, dancing, singing to stunning changes of scenery. Truly, this was as good as any top London show. Well done, Wads, something all of you and Worcester should be immensely proud of." The next letter from a Stan Gin of Upper Colwall is more sober. I respect the views of the two consultants who wrote on the subject of assisted dying. The essential role of the doctor in the process receives little attention. Medics with such traditional views should not be required to end life, but others who take a broader view of the doctor's role to relieve suffering and to act humanely should be permitted to do so. I have a personal interest in that I witnessed my fit and active sister degenerate over 12 months into a helpless shadow of herself, unable to move unaided, feed herself, or perform any basic functions. For many weeks, she begged for help to end her life, even managed to acquire some rudimentary equipment on the internet, but was too frail to use it. In the end, she starved herself to death because the legal risks of complying with her wishes were considered too great by her husband. A distressing experience for all of us, and I would never have treated a pet like this. If vets are prepared to ease suffering in this way, why is some of the medical profession so opposed? As your correspondents accept, medical science has moved on in the last 2,000 years, and it's now possible to keep people alive for much longer. But when such a continued life becomes unendurable, then surely that is the time to bring it to an end. The next letter is from Martin Willis of Malvern Link. As I sit down to complete yet another West Midlands Trains delay repay claim, I am struck by the smiling photograph of our MP, Harriet Baldwin, under the headline, MP Positive About Rail Links. I have to ask, what planet is she on? Does she ever travel on our local trains? I need to travel by train at least twice every week, as a lead volunteer with a disability charity, and to collect grandchildren from school. A few weeks ago, I was stranded at Worcester Shrub Hill station late at night. The frequency of cancellations and delays causes me frustration and worry that I will not be able to fulfil these commitments. For daily commuters, it must be even worse. I sincerely hope that our next MP will prioritise sorting out our basic train services rather than posing for photo opportunities in meetings with government ministers, members of the House of Lords and Worcestershire Conservative County Councillors. And the last letter is from Rachel Wallace, who is NSPCC Local Campaigns Manager for the Midlands. The NSPCC believes everyone has a part to play in helping to keep children safe, from shop workers and cafe staff to librarians, swimming pool attendants and passengers on public transport. That's why our Listen Up, Speak Up campaign is encouraging schools, businesses and community groups across the Midlands to take part in free workshops, offering advice on what to do if you're concerned for a child's safety or well-being and who to contact for support. The workshops are being offered face-to-face and online through a series of real-life scenarios, giving practical advice about how to approach challenging situations where a child might be at risk. We're determined to reach as many people and as many communities as possible so we can inspire a movement of change that ensures all children and young people live happier, safer lives. We would love to hear from you about hosting one of our Listen Up, Speak Up workshops, so please do get in touch. Together, we can make a difference. To organise or attend a workshop, please email midlandscampaigns@nspcc.org.uk. We require a minimum of 10 people at each face-to-face session. Anyone can sign up to our free 10-minute online training by visiting nspcc.org.uk/speakup.
Okay, so we're going to start on the other articles now. So my first one is St George's Day Bash. Crowds lined the streets as hundreds of youngsters donned their smartest uniform to take part in celebrations to mark a very special day. Squirrels, beavers, cubs, scouts and sea scouts were all represented at Worcester's annual St George's Day Parade 2024 as the sunshine made an appearance on Sunday, April the 21st. Crowds, including proud parents and relatives, gathered in Angel Street before setting off to Worcester Cathedral for a special service to mark the day. The sounds of drums filled Angel Street as the parade commenced and made its way along the High Street to Worcester Cathedral, with people lining the parade route. Children aged from 4 to older scouts aged up to 25 marched in immaculate uniform, with each troop holding their flags aloft. The marching band then led the group into the cathedral for the service, which started at 2:15 p.m. The Mayor of Worcester, Louise Stephen, said, "It is a fantastic event that happens every year, and this year has been bigger and better than before. It is great seeing all the children getting together. It is incredible and a life-forming experience for them. What a great thing to get children away from their screens and be part of the community. You can see a lot of pride in what they're doing here, and the parade is one of the biggest things on this day. Even Worcester's iconic Sir Edward Elgar statue near Cathedral Square was appropriately dressed for the occasion in a scout neckerchief and woggle." St George's Day is traditionally celebrated on April the 23rd to mark England's patron saint. He is also the patron saint of scouting.
My article has the headline, "Boy is hoping for a new bionic arm." The family of a boy from Worcestershire who is hoping to raise money for a prosthetic arm says it would mean the world to him. Noah Williams from Clifton-upon-Team was born with a below-elbow limb difference on his right arm, which means it's shorter than his left. A crowdfunding campaign has been set up in the hope of raising enough money to give Mr. Williams, aged 11, a new arm by the Open Bionics Foundation. The target is to raise £20,000 for him and two other children who have been chosen by Open Bionics to get a new arm. Rebecca Orton, his mother, said, "Noah was born with a limb difference, which at the time was quite a shock. Since birth, he has had to find new creative ways to do things he wants to do. He's right side dominant, so he's had to learn to do things with his left side, and he does things in his own way. He uses his little arm to help in any way he can, such as buttoning his shirt or tying his tie for school. Everything he does, he makes adjustments to. He doesn't like accepting help, but approaches it with an amazing attitude and doesn't shy away from things." Ms. Orton said her son did struggle sometimes with his physical deficiency, but he uses humour to get round the difficulties of living with it. "He'll joke that he lost his arm in a shark attack," she said. "It's natural instinct for people to look at something that is new to you, but he has an amazing friendship group who don't notice his deficiency. His confidence is great, but sometimes he doesn't want the attention." She said it would mean the world to her son to be given a bionic arm and would help his aspirations of being a sports reporter. While having a child with physical deficiency was at times really difficult, she had pride and admiration for his positive approach. He was saying how it would give him another hand, which he'd never had before. I think having a futuristic arm would also give him more positive attention and increase his confidence. A fundraising page, which was created earlier this month, has so far raised £6,555 of the £20,000 target. Donations can be made from the GoFundMe page, fundraiser by crowdfunding support, : The Big Hero 3 2024 UK brackets GoFundMe.com close brackets. As well as raising further awareness, there are events planned to contribute to the crowdfunding campaign. Noah's school, the Chantry at Martley, is hoping to raise £300, while a football charity game and quiz night are among other fundraising events. The wider community is supporting the campaign too, with Great Whitley Primary School, the Cobb House, Mulligan's, Worcester United Football Club and Bromyard Rugby Club having donated money.
Amazing views of the city for just 50p. One thing we can all agree on is that 50p nowadays cannot buy you much, and I would bet 50p on that. But one thing it can buy is a small rowing trip across the city's River Severn, where passengers can admire the best view in Worcester. The Cathedral Ferry has been rowing people across the river in Diglis for over 600 years and has been a charitable cause for the past 40 by raising funds for the likes of Acorns, Mags Day Centre and St Richard's Hospice. The small journey, which only takes a matter of minutes, has been acclaimed for its relaxing atmosphere and the best view of Worcester Cathedral, which most visitors happen to miss. So I decided to kick up my feet, change my usual riverside walk and take a ride on the Cathedral Ferry. Saturday, April the 20th marked the first day back of the service this year as the boat is put to bed over the winter months. I was greeted by my ferry person, Aidan Binding, and Doris, the wooden boat and faithful team member who takes passengers on their journey across the river. As soon as the boat left the cathedral steps, I instantly felt lifted and relaxed. The river had provided a moment of peace away from the hustle and bustle of the city centre. The rhythmic push from the boat as the oars hit the water provided a sensation of ease and tranquility. Halfway across, amid the swans, passengers can see the length of the river, taking in Worcester Cathedral, the busy South Quay and the historic Worcester Bridge. "It is one of the best places to see the cathedral because you're in the water," said Mr. Binding. "There is a different type of noise when you're in the water, and I think you're more attuned to nature as you're sitting there. If there is a game on in New Road, you will sometimes even get the occasional burst of applause. The swans will come up and greet you. It is lovely. It is understandable why each summer people pay the 50p charge to ride the rustic old rowboat. Visitors are not just getting the sensation of ease and amazing views, but are rowing in the same footsteps as their ancestors. You can't get much for 50p, but what it does get you is an experience that provides some more than the silver heptagon resting in your back pocket. And there's a picture of the plaque that's on the cathedral walls, saying that a ferry has operated here for many centuries between the Cathedral Watergate and Chapter Meadows on the opposite bank. It crossed every day until the late 1950s. The service was restarted in 1983, running during summer weekend afternoons. The proceeds are given to local charities.
Another article now on the history side of the newspaper. And it's about Hindlip Hall, which most of us associate with both the police and fire and rescue services. But this is about a time when the building was in danger. Today, Hindlip Hall, which lies between Worcester and Droitwich and about half a mile from the M5, is the technology-bristling headquarters of West Mercia Police and Hereford and Worcester Fire and Rescue Service. The presence of the latter should provide some reassurance for the former, because hopefully it will mitigate against what happened there in the autumn of 1965, when the whole lot nearly burnt down. On October the 18th that year, a fire broke out in the roof of what was then the headquarters of Worcestershire Constabulary, and it was all hands to the pump, literally. More than 50 firefighters battled to prevent the flames breaking down into the top floor of the historic building, which would almost certainly have led to its destruction, while police and civilian staff, with Chief Constable Sir John Willison to the fore, combined to rescue as many files and records as possible. Remember, those were the days when everything was on paper. Worcestershire's Chief Fire Officer, Gerald Eastham, said later, "Those of us who were under the roof for 1¾ hours, facing the problem of two large water tanks likely to come crashing down, were determined not to abandon the top floor, because we knew the fire would spread at second floor level and go through the building. The eventual cost of the fire was around £50,000, more than £1 million today. But through some astute accounting, the rebuilding figure included alterations to the hall needed to cater for its impending role as the centre of the newly created West Mercia Police Force due to take over the patch in 1967. In fact, Hindlip Hall wasn't the original name of the property on the site. That was Hindlip House, which was built in the second half of the 1500s by John Habington. This magnificent Elizabethan country manor was described as the most famous house in England for entertainment of priests. However, entertainment was code for the property being a safe haven for harbouring fugitive Catholic priests, called treacherous popish trash by the authorities, and had nothing to do with drinking or dancing or any other non-priestly activities. Between 1590 and 1606, its most renowned period, Hindlip House had as many as 11 priest holes, ingenious secret places where priests could be concealed from their pursuers for days on end. I should think it rivalled Harvington Hall, which is very well known for priest holes. A reed through a hole in a chimney or an outer wall was often their sole source of ventilation. There was a concealed tube so they could be fed broths and warm drinks. Following discovery of the gunpowder plot in November 1605, the property was searched for conspirators, and four Jesuit priests were eventually forced from their hiding places. A couple gave up after 2 days in the almost intolerable conditions, but the other two, Edward Oldcorn and Henry Garnet, lasted 8 days in hiding before surrendering. Both were later executed in Worcester. Hindlip House was demolished in 1820 after being badly damaged by fire. A new property, to be called Hindlip Hall, was built by Lord Southwell. Following his death in 1860, the hall was bought by the Burton-on-Trent brewer Henry Allsop, who became the first Baron Hindlip. He carried out considerable improvement to the house and gardens, including a new 6-acre lake with 4,000 fish, and they became the heart of his 1,600-acre estate. After the Allsop family moved to Wiltshire early in the 20th century, Hindlip Hall went through a number of uses, including about 25 years as a girls' school. During the Second World War, it was taken over by the Ministry of Works, and there were emergency plans drawn up to move the cabinet to Hindlip Hall, with the Prime Minister's office based at Spetchley Court. After the war, the hall was bought by Worcestershire County Council. An agricultural college was set up in the grounds, and the main house turned into the headquarters of the county police, which moved from its cramped base in Castle Street, Worcester. In 2018, the two counties' fire and rescue service moved in too. which should endure, and particularly make sure that the electric sockets are safe.
A sculpture in Sidbury commemorating the Battle of Worcester would be the first national monument of its kind. The sculpture is one of a number of projects that could be funded by £5 million worth of levelling up cash given to Worcester by the government. Worcester City Council has until May the 10th to submit its plans for how it wants to spend the money, and it has drawn up a list of cultural and heritage projects that are set to be debated by its Policy and Resources Committee next week. The sculpture, which is earmarked to receive £50,000 of levelling up funding, is to depict a key battle in the English Civil War. According to committee papers, it will be located near King Street car park, the site of the final battle, and is described as a distinctive linear steel sculpture. The sculpture will be designed by renowned sculptor Ken Potts, who created the Elgar statue in Cathedral Square. The hope is that the sculpture will play a part in bringing Civil War tourism to the city, heritage that is already kept alive by the likes of the Historic Commandery and the Battle of Worcester Society. Daniel Daniels, the Society's chairman, said, "We are delighted that Worcester City Council has put our name forward for funding for the first ever national monument of its kind. Worcester played a pivotal role in the beginning and the end of the Civil War, and our proposed sculpture will elevate Worcester's standing on the National Heritage Map." The sculpture is designed to be made from laser-cut steel in layers to show the action and drama of the Battle of Worcester. The proposed funding from Worcester City Council is a tremendous boost. Our sincere thanks to David Blake, Managing Director of the City Council, and Robin Walker, MP. Other projects set to benefit from the funding include education centres at the City Art Gallery and the Tudor House Museum, additional public spaces as part of the Scala and Corn Exchange development, and investment in Gelvelt Park, Cripplegate Park and Pitchcroft.
The next article is illustrated by a picture of the interior of a house, the floor and the walls covered in mould and damp. And there's an inset picture of a councillor, Karen Lewing, Green councillor, who has been involved in making sure that houses with this problem are dealt with. Too afraid to complain. This photo shows a mouldy and damp home, but some tenants are too afraid to complain despite the risks to their health, says Green councillors, who have raised the alarm. Green councillors said they are frustrated by mouldy and damp conditions in homes in the Arboretum in Worcester after they visited the homes to see for themselves. Green councillors Hannah Cooper and Karen Lewing have been visiting homes where private tenants have damp or mould but are very worried about complaining. Councillor Cooper said, "In February, I raised my concern for extensive black mould in the communal staircase of a residential building in the Arboretum, managed by a private landlord. However, I was told by City Council officers that they couldn't progress my concern without a direct complaint from a resident, and they also needed evidence that a resident had also complained to their landlord before they could investigate further. But the residents were too fearful of retaliatory action by the landlord, lacked confidence, and some also had language barriers, so felt powerless to take action despite their health concerns." Councillor Lewing said that there are further problems in terraced housing. She said, "Where a property is a registered HMO, there are regular inspections as part of the licensing process, but other properties are falling through the net. I recently visited a resident in a terraced house with underlying health issues who showed me mould and the poor condition of their house. They also explain that the landlord has also skyrocketed their rent. Councillor Ewing said she encouraged the resident to contact the City Council's private sector housing team if their landlord continued to delay essential improvements to receive help. She added, although many landlords behave responsibly and keep their properties in good order, it's essential that prompt action is taken when there is a significant health risk, rather than leaving the resident in a precarious position. Councillor Neil Lawrenson, the councillor for St Stephen, said, the government promised a renters' reform bill to create a fairer, safer system for renters, but it's been making very slow progress. Every day, 172 private renting families in England are handed a Section 21 no-fault eviction notice by their landlord. That is one every 8 minutes, while at the same time we know that unhealthy homes cause and worsen illness and can cut lives short. It's the responsibility of landlords to identify and address housing problems. Yet people are still living in housing where damp and mould is not treated with the seriousness that it is needed to protect their tenants' health.
This is the exciting moment. The first of four peregrine falcon eggs hatched at Worcester Cathedral. There's a picture of the parent looking at the one little bird just hatched. Avid watchers of the Peregrine live stream were delighted to see the first egg hatch on Monday morning, on the same timescale as last year. The hatching appears to be healthy. Chris Dobbs, the Cathedral's biodiversity advisor, said, "It's great news that we have what appears to be a healthy first chick. One of the nice things is that it's happened on exactly the same timescale as last year. The Peregrines are very regular. This female knows the exact number of days from laying to hatching, so we knew exactly when to expect it." The pair of adult falcons have been named Percy and Peggy and arrived at the historic building in 2022. The Watch the Action live visit www.worcestercathedral.org.uk/news/peregrine falcons. Mr Dobbs continued, "It should be around a week now until all four have hatched and hopefully we'll end up with four healthy chicks. Normally there's a day or two in between each egg, but it looks like the second one might hatch sooner than that, which is really good, as the closer they are in age and strength, the better when competing for food. As the weeks go by, the chicks will get bigger and bigger very quickly, and fledglings should start around the end of May or the beginning of June. So keep watching the live stream for lots of exciting updates over the coming days and weeks. The birds thrive in the urban environment, building nests on top of some of our city's highest buildings, hunting small birds, including pigeons."
And my next article is a heartening one about a very brave and public-spirited man. Tom, 75, overcomes fall to finish London Marathon. A 75-year-old man from Malvern has just completed his fifth London Marathon despite having a bad fall, landing on his face and crossing the finishing line with it all bandaged up. Tom Rose's daughter, Hannah Rose, who went to London to support her father, said, "It was quite eventful for Dad. He ran with my brother, Thomas Rose. They were doing well until about mile 20. Then Tom, my dad, had a fall. He tripped on some rubbish on the track and landed on his face. He was given first aid by St John's Ambulance. They told him he was unable to continue with the race. Him being the stubborn man he is, he wouldn't listen. He wouldn't let the charity or himself down. Tom, who was running in aid of the Royal British Legion, has been the poppy man for part of Malvern for 16 years, delivering all of the poppy boxes and collecting them in every year in the Barnard's Green area. Thomas Rose, Hannah's brother, was also running to raise money for the British Legion. Hannah said, "When Dad fell, the St John's ambulance people dressed his face, cleaned some of the blood from his face, hands and knees, and told him if he wouldn't take advice and continued, then he shouldn't run as that could make the bleeding worse. Myself and the children were waiting at mile 25. We could see the time between checkpoints had suddenly dropped and they'd lost half an hour from the pace they'd set for the first 20 miles. We assumed they had started to walk. So when they ran past and we saw his face all bandaged, it was a big shock. When my niece had seen them at mile 19, she had said they both looked well and not too tired. Anyway, he ploughed on and made it to finish in just under 6 hours. He's raised £721 so far, but still has money coming in. I'm so proud of him for carrying on, even though he suffered such a bang to the face. He really is an inspiration." Tom's six-year-old granddaughter, Jessica Innes, had been busy raising money to support him by selling bracelets that she'd made. The family live in Jamaica Road, Malvern, and Jessica and her brother, Archie Innes, aged 8, go to Summers Park Primary School. Hannah said, "It was heartwarming to see my daughter Jess make the bracelets and want to raise as much money as possible to help support her granddad. She is a special girl." Tom Rose lives in Highfield Road, Malvern. He's a retired electrical engineer as well as other things. He was in the army, serving with Remy, and was a paratrooper and commando trained. He's done multiple walks and previous marathons to raise money for the Royal British Legion. Hannah said, "He trains regularly on the Malvern Hills. My mother trains with him." Tom said, "My daughter Hannah has supported my annual poppy appeal fundraising over the years, delivering boxes, manning stalls and counting the money collected. The people and shops of Barnard's Green have always been very generous in their support." Tom has a page on Facebook, www.facebook.com/business-fish.busyfish. His Just Giving page is royalbritishlegion.enthuse.com/pf/tom-rose.
Okay, Labour and the Green Party say there are no plans to introduce an ultra-low emission zone, or ULEZ, in the city centre, despite claims in Tory election leaflets. Worcester Conservatives have included claims about a proposed ULEZ, similar to those implemented in London and Birmingham, in campaign materials. And on the party's website, it asks people to support its campaign to stop such a scheme being introduced in Worcester. But both Labour and the Greens, who have shared power in the City Council for the past 12 months, say no such plan has been put forward and would not be supported if it were. Lynn Denham, leader of Worcester Labour Group, said, "Let's be clear. There is no plan to implement a ULEZ in Worcester from any party. Instead of offering a manifesto of policies and ideas, the Tories are selling people a pack of lies. The Conservatives are spreading misinformation in the desperate hope that after 14 years of failure in government, crashing the economy and selling off the NHS piece by piece, they can bamboozle voters to vote for them once again. I am calling on the public to reject this tapestry of lies at the ballot box. Labour listens to residents and we have practical plans for Worcester's future. This year, voters have the chance to send a clear message. We need change. We need a fresh start and to rebuild. I urge everyone to vote and to vote Labour." A Green Party spokesman said, "The Green Party local manifesto is published on our website at worcester.greenparty.org.uk/manifesto/, and does not contain any proposals to introduce or campaign for a ULEZ scheme in Worcester. The City Council does not have the power to introduce such a scheme. Worcester Conservatives have not published a manifesto for these elections. Voters simply do not know what they are getting when they vote Conservative. Green voters across the city know exactly what they will get. Year-round, hard work from councillors, not just at election time, backed up by a clear manifesto. Conservative County Councillor and parliamentary candidate Mark Bayliss said, "Labour and the Greens have very anti-motorist policies, shown not just in their words, but in their deeds over the last few years. We've already seen Labour introduce ULEZ in Birmingham and London, but they won't come out and say it because they know how unpopular these schemes are. They are dressed up as air quality concerns, but safer streets, low traffic neighbourhoods, they are all anti-motorist and ULEZ is exactly the same. Ultra-low emission zones are areas of a city where a standard-based charge is applied to non-compliant road vehicles."
And now a perennial but nevertheless current hot potato. Views on smoking plan. Worcester news readers have been discussing potential smoking ban plans which should stop young people from ever smoking. Legislation is designed to increase the smoking age annually, effectively preventing those born in 2009 or later from ever legally buying tobacco products. Commenting on Facebook, reader Grant Gibbs said, "I know it's taking a little bit of freedom away to do as you please, but it's about time they started preventing issues and illness in future generations, which will put pressure on the NHS. Karen Hobson said, "While I'm in favour, there's only any point if it's actually going to be policed and enforced. Smoking weed is supposedly illegal, yet where I live, it doesn't matter where you go, you can smell it." Len Perry said, "I wish I'd never smoked and don't anymore. I'm just concerned that gradually choices are being taken away from us." Nikki Han commented, "Vaping is a much bigger problem in young people than smoking." While Francis Kellett said, "Should have been banned years ago when the consequences were fully understood." Well, now we've come to the end of this evening's recording. I do hope you've enjoyed hearing all the articles and the useful information. Many thanks to the team, that's Moira and Alex, and also Carol and the admin team who work so hard in the background. We hope you'll tune in for next week's offering. So for now, from us all, good night and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Well, now those useful telephone numbers. Fire, police or ambulance in emergency, 999 or 112. Emergency social care calls to Worcestershire County Council, Worcester 768020. And non-urgent calls to the County Council, Worcester 765765. To contact the Electricity National Grid in an emergency, 105. And in the event of a power cut, 0800 917 7953. There's a priority service available from which you can register free of charge. For that service, 0800 032 8302. Non-urgent calls to the fire prevention team and fire safety, 0800 032 1155. Non-urgent calls to the police, 101. Crime Stoppers, 0800 555 111. NHS Direct, 111. Domestic Abuse Helpline, 0800 980 3331. Samaritans, 116 123, and that's a free phone number. Citizens Advice, 0808 278 7891. Age UK, Worcester 724 294. You already have Worcester Talking News number. Please be aware it's not manned daily and you might get an answering service. And please be patient if a reply is required. Worcester Live, that's the Swan Theatre and Huntingdon Hall box office, Worcester 611427. Malvern Theatre's box office, 01684892277. Norbury Theatre box office, Worcester 770154. Number 8 Theatre in Pershaw, 01386, 555488. Worcester Wheels number for transport, Worcester 450654, that's from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And Link Nurseries at Powick have a gardening session for visually impaired people on Friday mornings. Worcester 831881 for more information. And that leads us to our last piece today, and that's the obituaries. I'll ask Moira to start.
Donald Cook passed away peacefully, surrounded by his family, on the 5th of April, aged 93 years. The funeral service at Worcester Crematorium has already taken place. Donations, if desired, to Midlands Air Ambulance. Sheila Mary Hawkins, née Lamberton, sadly passed away on the 2nd of April 2024 at the age of 92 years. Funeral to take place at Worcester Crematorium on Wednesday, the 1st of May at 1:45 p.m. Family flowers only. If desired, personal donations can be sent to your chosen charity. Brian Jones, ex-plumber. Brian passed away peacefully following a short illness in hospital on the 4th of April 2024, aged 78 years. The service to celebrate his life has already been held.
Hazel Jean Sanders of Ombersley passed away peacefully on the 25th of March 2024, aged 95 years. The funeral service and interment has taken place. Donations, if desired, for Alzheimer's Research UK. Annette Stanton died surrounded by family on Monday, the 8th of April, aged 83. A service to celebrate Annette's life will take place at 12:15 p.m. on Tuesday, the 7th of May 2024, at Worcester Crematorium. Donations, if so desired, will be gratefully received for ovarian cancer. And lastly, Robin Duncan Cheese, Rob, sadly passed away at Worcestershire Royal Hospital on Monday, the 8th of April 2024, aged 79 years. The funeral service has taken place. Donations, if desired, to Breast Cancer UK.